We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Feel like Kobe in the fourth quarter.
This is the Dame Moore NBA podcast brought to you by Blue Wire Podcasts. And on today's show, I'll be joined by Britt Robson of The Athletic. Britt and I will get into the second round of the playoffs. The Suns have already taken down the Nuggets, Suns in four. But we've got plenty to get to in Hawks Sixers, Clippers Jazz, and Bucks Nets. Before I bring Britt in, though, I've got two things to tell you about first. And one is that our presenting sponsor is BetUS. And with the NBA playoffs here, we've got a place for you to wager. BetUS also has NFL Week 1 lines already live for you to bet on. At BetUS, they have great payouts, the industry's biggest bonuses, and every bet type you could dream of from my friends over at BetUS. You can join now by calling 1-800-69-BETUS or online at BetUS.com. And there you can get 125% sign-up bonus using promo code DANE125. BetUS, you bet, you win, you get paid. And secondly, a reminder that Britt and I will be at Forgotten Star Brewery for a live event next Tuesday, June 22nd. That is NBA Draft Lottery Night. So come through that night, meet Britt and I. We'll watch the lottery together over some beers. And Britt and I will do a live show after the lottery's results come in. Forgotten Star is a huge brewery with plenty of room to watch the lottery and whatever playoff game is going to come on after the ping pong balls drop. They will be selling a beer at the event whose proceeds go to the Fridley basketball program called the Buzzer Beater Honey IPA. If you do want to check out Forgotten Star before lottery night, they're located in Fridley about 10 minutes away from downtown Minneapolis and are open at noon 7 days a week. I have been wanting to do a live show since I took this podcast independent. Obviously, the pandemic got in the way of that, so I'm excited that we can now do this and watch lottery together. Again, on NBA lottery night, which is June 22nd, Britt and I will be there at 6, and the lottery starts at 7:30. So come on through, Forgotten Star Brewery, again, located 10 minutes from downtown Minneapolis, and have a beer. And if the Wolves win the lottery, maybe arrange yourself a ride home. But let's get to Britt. All right, I am joined by Britt Robson of The Athletic. We are back here to talk about the second. I guess the last time we talked was before the second round had started. We're now
we had one or two games of the second round in. I think the Hawks had beaten the Sixers one game, I think.
Yeah, it was with the mixed of the hangover of the round one and the round two.
Yeah, round one. Yeah, it was on the cusp.
Yes. Now we are at here on Tuesday afternoon. We have one series done. Phoenix has swept Denver, of course. And the other three series are at 2-2. And Britt, I feel like the place to start is with the team that you and I have both been into all season long and is, I don't want to say the favorite or anything like that, but they're clearly the farthest along in the playoffs and have to be considered, I think, an NBA title contender in the Phoenix Suns.
I think this, they still have to go a ways. They have two really big series to go. The great thing about the NBA playoffs, with some minor exceptions, especially when the East and the West were so far down from East was so worse than the West. But aside from that, it's kind of meant to be that you get tougher each series. And that has happened. I mean, I think that, although actually I now have to contradict myself because the Lakers were actually tougher on the Suns than the Nuggets were. But that said, I think that their next two series will be their toughest two series. And so as much as I love the Suns, I'm interested to see what happens when a team is capable of taking them out of their game, if in fact that's possible.
Right, because rhythm is what's kind of defined them.
And maturity. Yeah. In a weird, weird way, I can't remember who the some talking head on NBA TV or somebody said, it was Kyle Korver. I saw Kyle Korver, of all people, who's got a future, I think, in this talking game, essentially saying, I trust Phoenix. Those kids are playing like mature veterans. There's a maturity factor there. He says, I trust the Suns. And I thought that was a really good way to put it, because these aren't flukes that are happening.
Right.
They haven't quite reached a team. I mean, the Lakers with AD, obviously, with that team. But they haven't quite reached a team that has really put them on the ropes, taking away things that they can take away.
Well, I think what's interesting is we don't know that team is necessarily coming.
Right, exactly. Either. Well, I mean, a lot of it has to be to get Aiden in foul trouble. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that the Bucks could do that. I think that I don't know if the Nets could do that. I think the Clippers could certainly do that. And I think that the Jazz could do that. So, yeah.
Right. I mean, that which just kind of sums it up perfectly is there's just this. It's open, right?
It is open. It is open.
I was looking this up before, and Vegas has Phoenix with the best championship odds, but tied exactly with Brooklyn and Milwaukee, all at plus 350, which is you know, pretty open. You know,
right.
that's out there. But
was this before the Clippers won last night?
No, this was like an hour ago when I looked it up. So that's
I don't understand why people are sleeping on the Clippers myself.
The Clippers are down. They have the fifth best odds at plus 600 with Utah above them. But Vegas has been on Utah the whole time, just as I've been kind of looking at.
Well, Vegas was on Portland the whole time against Denver, wasn't it?
Maybe. I mean,
sometimes I can't believe Vegas has slipped. I have such respect for Vegas.
Well,
they'll be right. Maybe Utah will come.
It's because this season, this playoff season isn't really making sense. It's swinging so rapidly,
and it's injury prone,
right? And that which you know, brings the Brooklyn piece to mind, which is I also looked at those odds a week ago, and Brooklyn was favored over the entire field.
Yeah.
So now
a lot of people are going to lose a lot of money on Kyrie's ankle.
Well, I mean, but at the same time, I mean, where I would sit on that is if you had to make me choose between Brooklyn and Phoenix to win the championship right now, I think I would still stay with Brooklyn. And obviously, I have my biases of that's where I've kind of been on this whole time. But
right.
I don't know if you saw that came out about an hour ago, but James Harden is playing tonight in game 5.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that either. But what these playoffs have kind of not affirmed, but maybe surprised me, is that to me, Brooklyn does not need all three.
They should not have all three on the court at the same time. They should stagger.
That's where you're at. I mean,
I have always
okay stagger. That's different. Not sitting them completely.
Well, true, but I do. Crunch time is where it will matter for a lot of these things. And do you sit any of those three guys in crunch time?
No.
Well, there you go. That's my point. If you have those three guys all on the floor at crunch time, I want to see that happen. I want to see that be successful before I think I'm wrong. Because I've said this, I probably said this on like four of your pods right now. All three of those guys legitimately believe they're number one guys. All three of those guys have big things to prove about being the alpha guy on a ring winner. Kyrie was second to LeBron, you would argue. You would argue that KD, despite his MVPs, was second to Steph, at least in terms of people's perceptions. And Harden has never gotten there. And so all of them really feel like they should be the guy. Now, does somebody give it up? Let's say you see the double team coming and you see it might be one of your heralded teammates who has a slightly better opportunity than you do, but perhaps not a obviously better opportunity than you do, especially given what you're thinking about right now,
right,
which is winning this whole shebang. That's going to be the test for me. That's going to be, can this team play in a manner that neither bruises egos, in a manner that creates real friction? And can they make the right decisions and forgive the obvious occasional lack of execution that happens sometimes?
I get the idea of being skeptical about some of that stuff. But again, if we're more looking at this like mathematically,
sure.
I don't, to me, those questions don't outweigh the questions I have about any other team,
mm-hmm,
who's left in this mix. And I would say the team Phoenix is the one I have the second fewest questions about, uh-huh, which is why I would probably power rank it Brooklyn, Phoenix right
but
now.
But what's really cool about that is that Phoenix, for whatever reason, doesn't have those issues.
True.
I mean, Booker and Paul are obviously alpha, beta alpha, however you want to, co-alpha. Whatever is going on there, Chris Paul is the veteran presence and the guy who's the professor of the franchise. And Booker is the emerging, you know,
pupil.
Yeah, the star, though. He's the star of the team.
He is. But Chris has been incredible.
Hey, I had Chris Paul in my MVP conversation almost the entire season.
You did. I was looking on Synergy today. And Chris Paul, in these playoffs where he has played one-armed for a whole time, but so take the whole playoffs, both rounds.
Right.
He's run 168 pick and rolls that have either led to his shot or his pass, which is a ton. That's like that's 17 a game.
Yeah.
And that is the best of all high volume, of the 33 highest volume pick and roll players in the playoffs this year. And that's just, I mean, we know he's an elite point guard, but that he's been able to do this through the injury that has limited his ability in the pick and roll game.
Right.
It's kind of turned him into a two-level scorer. Whereas if you watch Phoenix during the regular season, he's coming off those screens, reading the drop and then stepping back into a three. Like we haven't, I think it's like he's shot 14 or 18 total threes in the whole playoffs.
Right.
That's like one and a half a game. That's nothing, you know? And so for him to be that dominant in that action, and for him to also be dominant in isolations as well. He's second behind only Lillard and Harden in isolations. I mean, like, yeah, I'm with you. Booker's the star. He's putting up more points. But Chris Paul is playing as much like a superstar player in these playoffs as any player in the whole league.
Yes, he is. And Booker is following his lead. He has taught Booker as well as Monty Williams. I mean, we can't leave him out of the conversation. But Booker is finding people like never before. I mean, even I've loved the Suns almost all year. Maybe December or mid-January is when I just really locked in. But Booker has been finding teammates more than he did the previous year, but he's taken another step at finding teammates in these playoffs. And Aiden has gotten the confidence of learning how to defend without fouling. Bridges is the perfect glue guy on the wing. I mean, there's just Cam, you know, the guy.
Former
Cam
Wolf.
And Sarich for Jared Culver. I mean, that's a cool one, man. I mean, all you have to do is say that, you know. It's only like six words, right, or three words. Cam and Sarich for Jared Culver. You know,
it's
hats off, Gerson Rosas.
Well, or James Rose. I would say I thought that was a good trade for the Wolves at the time.
Well, if
for the I mean
if
for Culver the sixth
had panned
slot.
Out, yes.
Yeah. It's kind of representative of more so Phoenix's style of James Jones as their GM, where they've taken a lot of these kind of moves that aren't very modern GM-y, you know, and,
right,
and targeting specific players, which is kind of, most people would say is a bad move when you're a bad team to like go get a Dario Saric. I mean, how many wins did the Suns have the year before they went and got an established player, Dario Saric, right?
Exactly.
17, 19, 20 wins, something like
that.
Well,
not only that, but everybody mocked Cam as the pick.
Absolutely.
He was regarded as an enormous reach and a sign that they didn't know what they were doing.
And they mocked the Mikal Bridges pick,
yes,
too.
Exactly.
Because they had to trade a first round. I think they traded up from 16 to 10, and they gave up a first round pick to get there, too. So it's really cool as you know, somebody who understands tanking and those sort of things. I'm reading this book right now on the tanking era in the league, and it obviously all makes sense, right?
Right.
You math it out, but it's also very cool to see a team aggressively go for a championship when the rest of the league's landscape says you probably shouldn't do that right now.
Right.
Look what's in Brooklyn. Or it was the same thing. I mean, that's why I was everyone hated the Rockets, you know, back
right.
4 or 5 years ago
right.
because the Warriors existed. And, you know, Daryl Morey and the Rockets went for it. I thought that was, I don't know if nobles, you know, too. But, it, you know, we need that. You
yeah,
need that in the
and if it hadn't been for 17 missed threes in that game seven.
27. Over 27.
But who's counting?
Yeah.
Right.
So I don't know. It's just the Suns are a cool story. And I feel like when I'm around here in Minnesota and, you know, just talking to my friends who are more, you know, casual basketball fans, they go, you know, can Minnesota do what Phoenix did there, right? Like Phoenix was trash 2 years ago and they here they are, right? They're maybe the favorite to come out of the Western Conference. And it's interesting because the answer would require, if for that answer to be yes, it would require a front office being similarly bold to James Jones in a way that we mocked all along the pattern. But I don't know if it's the classic zig when you zag, when the rest of the league zagging sort of thing, but the Chris Paul thing is really the bullseye of it.
The $40 million man.
Exactly. But that's what made it all possible.
Yeah, exactly.
It's because his contract was so expensive that they literally just gave up Ricky and a first to get Chris Paul.
Right.
And, you know, you look at the rest of the league for all these Chris Paul-level players who have been traded, James Harden, 4 first-round picks, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and 4 picks.
Right, right.
All that, it's even what the Bucks gave up for Jrue Holiday.
Right.
In draft capital, what the Suns gave up for Chris Paul is a pittance.
Exactly. Because Chris Paul was damaged goods. James Harden had reduced the value of Chris Paul.
It's full circle there, right?
James Harden needed to be the guy. He couldn't coexist well. I mean, they didn't like each other at the end. That's why.
Yeah, and
they,
I would say some of that's on Chris.
Theoretically,
too.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, it's because Chris Paul probably figured out he was at least as good as James Harden,
yeah,
and was taking a backseat for 2 straight right. unsuccessful seasons, and while he was languishing in his early 30s, everybody's laughing at him for never winning anything. So, yeah, I'd be pissed.
Let's, we're recording this a few hours before game 5, so we don't, you know, that's going to kind of change the Bucks Nets landscape a little bit with Harden's return. But where are you just at on Brooklyn as a contender? Is there anything that you're looking at other than just their health?
Yes, I think that I would be interested to see them go a little bit bigger. I would love to see
how
put KD at the 3 and Claxton and Griffin on the court.
That hasn't happened, right?
No, well, I don't know if it has. I don't remember if it was.
So.
I think that they're concerned, obviously, about Griffin using him too many minutes, and if he gets in foul trouble, and let's say he and Claxton, it is kind of a gamble. On the other hand, you know, you've got DeAndre Jordan. I don't know if he can play any minutes, but I do like the idea of making it hard for Giannis to go to the basket without using so many people to do it, so that... to me, the key to the whole series for the Bucks is Chris Middleton.
Right.
We know what Giannis can do and what he can't do now. And also, as with Ben Simmons, who we'll talk about in a minute, Giannis and Ben Simmons, their yips at the free throw line are enormous. That's a huge factor. That's a psychological factor that, I mean, we've seen it in past playoffs, Nick Anderson most spectacularly, but
right.
any guy that has trouble shooting free throws with postseason games on the line adds a whole different dynamic that if you're the team that has the guy who's clanking free throws, it's just you're biting your nails, you're tearing out your hair. I mean, it's just, it's hard. And when their players are like the caliber of Giannis and Simmons, you're not going to sit them.
Well, when their games are predicated on, you know, downhill action,
right?
That's what they are best at.
Right.
And so, you know.
And that would be an argument not to play Griffin and Claxton at the same time, because then you might get them in foul trouble. And also,
I mean, I think Blake's done a good job solo.
Yeah, I think so. But I do think that, and it was kind of weird that Griffin didn't get much burn in that.
The last game?
Yeah, second half. He played like a chunk in the third quarter and then almost none at all. I mean, and part of that was they didn't have Kyrie, and they figured the best way to do it was space and pace and mm-hmm. let, you know, Durant go off from deep.
And I just wonder, you know, how much is going through Nash's head in terms of, you know, taking these guys out to how much did you get the yips as a coach about injuries?
Right.
Because, you know, I mean, knock on wood, Blake Griffin's a bad stomp away from a meniscus tear himself, right?
Without a doubt. Like, without a doubt.
And they do, as much as I'm saying they don't need three guys, they do need two plus support.
I think that's true. Although, if there's ever a chance for Kevin Durant to be a hero.
I was expecting that in the end
of game.
I
don't think
four.
It's out of the question still, especially against the Bucks.
But when you go, I mean, when you go with his the surrounding, what was the surrounding group at the end of that game?
Brown?
Jeff Green, Brown,
huh? Yeah.
Mike James. I mean,
talk about a guy playing out of his ass. I mean, I can't believe Mike James turning down All-Stars to get his shot has been one of the. I can't believe he's doing this. I can't believe he's making these baskets.
It's been.
I mean, that guy's confidence. I love to smoke what he's smoking.
We do this thing though, where we go, well, they still have the best player, you know. They still have this superstar player, and he can be the rising tide that raises all boats.
Like, and the best player is always an interesting conversation when Giannis is on the floor, isn't it?
Less interesting in this series.
I agree. Giannis has been kind of exposed yet again. I think his shot selection would help take care of some of that. And if he made some free throws, right. I mean, he clearly, I don't know what his averages are now, but they're still pretty spectacular.
I just pulled it up, 51% from the free throw line in the playoffs.
Yeah, but I meant in terms of points per game, rebounds per game. I mean, I'm sure they're enormous.
27, 14, and 5.5.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, and that's what people will point to. But if you watch the games, mm-hmm. you see that there's at least a half a dozen shots every game where you go, what the hell are you doing?
It was interesting. I was listening to Zach Lowe and Van Gundy before you came over, and they were talking about it. And Zach asked Van Gundy about that from a coaching standpoint, because he's like,
why can't you get into his head and say, don't do that
anymore? And, you know, obviously Van Gundy's going to kind of take the side of the coach, but he's like, I thought it was interesting. You place those seeds in Giannis's head, but
and then watch them wither in his brain.
But it's not when it's a star player, you don't have full control there. Is really
well. If
what
I'm
the
Bud, I know that I'm gone if he doesn't start playing better. So I would say I'd get in his face and I would say something and let the chips fall where they may. Bud may turn out to be a hero if he does that, because Giannis may say, I didn't like it, but he said this and.
It would be mathematically
turn me around.
It would be mathematically justified. He's 5 for 37 from three in the playoffs. That's 13.5%.
Yeah,
and 37. I mean, how many games did they play?
All of them are wide open. Are you going to contest the three by Giannis? I mean,
I wonder if I was sitting. I was probably sitting by you, but it was before. Would have been last year. One of the last games where we could go to, you know,
pre-COVID and everything. And I would always like to go to other teams' warmups and watch them. And I actually remember very first game I ever covered many years ago. It was a Wolves-Spurs game. And just watching Kawhi shoot in his drills is one of the most striking things. And it was my first time there. But how he just never missed. He just literally never missed. And I remember, to the Giannis point, this would have been last season, you know, watching him. And he's getting a real sweating. He's really putting in his work. He's coming in, shooting, you know, his pull-up threes. He's taking these. It was a shooting part of his workout. And I'm not kidding you, man. He must have taken 50, no defense, and made 20 of them.
Right.
And it's just like, you know, you don't got it. You just, at some point, if in an open gym setting, you are not able to make the vast majority of your, you know, of the shots that you're taking, it's just kind of bizarre that he has evolved into a player who does shoot jump shots, right?
Right.
Where it doesn't need to happen for him to be an effective player. And to the Bud point, they have decided to use him for ever since Bud's been there. What, 80-90% of the time is a four?
Right.
Which means he is not the screener.
Right.
And
in Atlanta, to give better context, Bud turned Al Horford and Paul Millsap into very capable three-point shooters, and neither one of those guys were that.
That's true.
Before they came.
That's true.
And so
he just might not have it, and that's okay, you know?
But at the same time, you do have to say, well, sometimes it works with people, and sometimes it doesn't. And the fact that Giannis is a freakishly athletic specimen, human being that is just built differently than the rest of us, you know, that often means that he can't exercise the same mechanics to get the same result.
Right.
Giannis's three never looks cool. I mean, it doesn't look like, you know, he's grooving, you know?
That's you come in the first day of high school basketball, and you start shooting like that, and the coach comes over and says, we're going to rework that shot, but until then, no three-pointers, you know?
And at the same time, you've got guys. I mean, you surround Giannis with Middleton, Bryn Forbes, you know, even Holiday, who's obviously also shooting terribly in this series. But you got guys who can make three-pointers, obviously. It's a Bud team in that respect. Right. Even George Hill, not this year, but last year in the bubble, I think was leading the NBA
in
threes.
Right.
So, I mean, and he's not getting any minutes right now, but pull a Shake Milton on him, you know, throw him in there and see what happens, you know?
Right.
And so, I don't know. I just feel like if the Bucks lose this series, they've been gifted two games to some extent. They were certainly gifted game four. Game three was just an old-fashioned slugfest that was kind of fascinating. But Chris Middleton has become, hard to say, most valuable because of Giannis's defense and all the things that Giannis does by his very presence. But the most impactful player in terms of swinging the series in a positive direction.
Right.
And Giannis can take away from his value in ways that no one else on that team can. He can lose you more. The odds of you winning if Giannis plays a certain way can drop precipitously if he doesn't play smart. And I could see that happening. I mean, this is a long time trend now. And
you know what, Britt, though? It's like this last 8 minutes or whatever of us talking could age really poorly, because what could prove to happen is James Harden has a hamstring issue, and he's, you know, he gives it a go tonight and he's out in 43 seconds again.
Sure.
And then it's KD and Mike James versus the Bucks, and the Bucks win this series. And like,
but the yes,
what I'm trying to say is, do you not? I don't know what my answer even is to this. Like, do we not think that they could still advance and win the championship?
Oh no, that's not what I'm saying at all. I But
then we're bagging on them a lot for that.
What we have to talk about, and I'm very comfortable saying this, is that the Bucks have a much better chance of winning against anybody if Giannis lays off the threes, posts up a little bit more, utilizes screener. Pick and rolls a little bit more, gets out in transition a little bit more, and when he's at the top of the key, a couple of dribble penetrations. I mean, there were times when Giannis has been thriving in the last 2 or 3 years where he's gotten 8 assists a game, and a lot of that is off dribble penetration.
100%.
So that makes the odds of beating a non-James Harden team or a James Harden team better. So it may be, yes, that Giannis plays stupidly. They win because James Harden is hurt, or they win anyway because Forbes finally finds his shot, Drew Holiday finds his shot, Middleton remains hot, and they play great defense, led by Giannis. All that can happen. I had the Bucks with everybody healthy losing in about 6 games. I didn't think it was going to be a blowout series. And when you lose what the Nets have lost, they could win it. But that isn't the point. The point is, can you have improve. A team that gives you their optimal performance night after night? And we're not seeing it out of Philly. We're not seeing it out of Milwaukee. We can't see it out of Brooklyn right now. It is kind of fascinating. We are kind of seeing it out of the Hawks.
Which that just sounds like coaching, right? And what would have we said a month ago about who the worst coach of that bunch is? We would have said Nate McMillan.
I like Nate McMillan, though. I do but like you, Nate McMillan. He is a hard ass. He's an old school guy. Nate McMillan against Tom Thibodeau was just so much fun because those guys, you know. But one thing I will say about McMillan is he has the right age of a team. You know, they have found a willingness because he was successful in part, is part of it, and also because Trae Young wants to vindicate the Luka comparison. And
let's take a quick break and then flip over to that series.
All right.
The NBA playoffs are here, and this summer's betting action is heating up with my friends over at BetUS. As Brett and I were just discussing, Vegas and BetUS see these NBA playoffs as just way up in the air. Phoenix is plus 350 to win the championship. Brooklyn and Milwaukee are also at plus 350. Utah behind them at plus 450. The Clippers at plus 600. Philly is now all the way down to plus 700, and Atlanta is the long shot down at plus 5,000. I seriously do not remember there ever being this much parity at this juncture of the playoffs. And if you feel like you've got a better feel on it than I do, than BetUS does, I'd encourage you to go create an account and place a wager. BetUS has a super straightforward betting platform where you can bet on those odds or check out others. And with the UFC, MLB, golf, Summer Olympics, and football season all just around the corner, you do need a sportsbook with great payouts. BetUS has the industry's biggest bonuses and every kind of bet type you could dream of. BetUS has been a pioneer in online betting for over 25 years and prides itself on being America's favorite sportsbook. So take advantage of this action-packed summer and sign up today at BetUS.com. That's BetUS.com or 1-800-69-BETUS. And receive 125% sign-up bonus when you use the promo code DANE125. And if you miss tip-off and forget to bet, that's no problem either. At BetUS, bet live all the way up to the final buzzer. And if you think it's too early to bet on the NFL, wrong. At BetUS, week one lines are already live for you to bet on. And if you want to play blackjack, you want to try a spin at the reels, there's also hundreds of games in the BetUS casino as well. I bet at BetUS, and so should you. Join now by calling 1-800-69-BETUS or online at BetUS.com. BetUS, you bet. You win, you get paid.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals? I struggle with perfectionist tendencies, and it can show up in my life as procrastination because I'd rather not do something at all than do it and not have it perfect. My perfectionism can trigger anxiety, and my anxiety can sometimes make me depressed. In the last year, though, I've prioritized therapy, and it has made a huge difference in my personal and professional life. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist, and you can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online. The service is available for clients worldwide and is more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. Visit BetterHelp.com/BlueWire. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P. And join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. Special offer for Blue Wire podcast listeners. Get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/BlueWire. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/BlueWire.
I think for me, Britt, the most surprising thing of the playoffs, when in terms of shift in my perception of at least a high level player, and this is Trae Young, and that is to, as before the break, what you were saying is whether it's vindication, whether it's buy-in of Nate McMillan's scheme, whether it's engagement of his other teammates, probably a combination of all three of those things. I mean, Trae Young is objectively playing like one of the best players in the NBA through, in this series, the defense of Ben Simmons, who I personally think is the best perimeter wing defender in the league. So,
and Simmons isn't on him as much as I want him to be, but he is on him a lot now.
Well, they're getting more. Last night we saw that in game four. It was, I don't know the numbers, but to my eye, it was the most they ever did, because they were fine. I wrote down in my notes when, like, Gallinari was going at Korkmaz.
Right.
And I'm like, wait, what are you doing, Doc? But then I was like, actually, I kind of get it. It's because you're trying to keep Simmons locked on Trae.
Right.
And I don't know.
And you miss Danny Green then.
You do. And which is, part of me went like, well, Danny Green didn't look very good in those first couple games.
No, and Danny Green is one of those guys. He's a glue guy, but let's face it, he's not the super glue he was in San Antonio and all the other places. Danny Green has slipped. All that said, he can provide spacing that Thibault can't provide. You want Thibault out there dribbling around on the perimeter. And Korkmaz can't really play defense, let's face it. Mm-hmm. And so those are your two options away from Danny Green. It is a loss.
Or your boy George Hill.
That is interesting. Hill as a two guard is an interesting idea. I wouldn't mind seeing it. Doc in the playoffs has got, he doesn't have a history of great decisions.
It's to me, when I'm watching them, and particularly in the second half last night, where, you know, Joel is 0 for 12 from the field in the second half, you need to be able to pick him up, right? Or it's the same thing. They've never been able to pick up the non-Joel minutes. And last night you have to, and they just don't have the perimeter creation.
See, and I have a solution for that, I think.
What?
Which is that you're totally underusing Tobias Harris. I don't understand why he isn't. Look, Ben Simmons is damaged psychologically right now because he can't make free throws.
Right.
And he's always had that squirrely aspect to him. When things are rolling for Ben Simmons, the world is his oyster. When things are not, he's sporadic. He's never bad, but he's prone. I think if Ben Simmons is rolling, that last play where Embiid totally blows the layup, Simmons hangs onto that ball.
Right.
Just those little things like that. And so Embiid is clearly weirdly damaged goods. Embiid was hunting calls with the entire fourth quarter rather than just treating Clint Capella and Collins like gnats.
I mean, but
he
had to be hurt.
He had to be hurt, fine.
Tired.
If he's hurt, then all the more reason why when he gets crunched on, he can crumble. But you remember that play where the two interior guys went straight up and he pretended to get hit as he was falling down, threw up a hook, and he got the whistle.
He did, but he
a
just needed to dunk
bunch
it.
Of bullshit yeah. that was.
I literally,
this guy, 290 pounds, I,
yep.
you know.
Texas somebody, Joel's got to dunk that. Right, but I don't think he could. I mean,
and if that's true, that's fine. That means if Embiid is 50% and certainly less than that on his shot right now and right. maybe in his mind, and Ben Simmons is squirrely, Tobias Harris is a really nice option. Do you remember that game two where he came out and just had like 16 in the first quarter?
Yeah, he had like 29 in the first half of that game.
He can post up. He can shoot threes. He can put it on the dribble. He can pass. He's not great on defense, but he's not bad.
He's just often, I'm with you, but he's often a second side player. And what I'm getting at is they need that instigation, right?
But let's see what happens. Let's see what happens if we feature him a little bit more. That puts Collins on him. You may get Collins in foul trouble.
Right.
Collins is foul.
I'm not against
the idea. Pretty cool way to find out. And then also, you have the advantage of, this sounds weird, but invest a little more confidence in Shake Milton, because I don't know why he turned down that shot that Curry got. That double pump.
He just had the pull.
Looked like he was on a bicycle.
He could have just walked it down and pulled that.
I don't understand it. Except it was the play call. He hasn't gotten, exactly. Yeah. And he hasn't gotten the affirmation. Right. But
they just need, that's why Shake has been important, is that he's that perimeter creation there. Even Seth Curry has been an option for them there. He's been good.
Right.
He's been good at that. I mean, he's now getting high screens, and he's coming and taking one, two dribbles into a step back.
Right.
You know, and he's been.
When that deal was made, this is a time to call myself stupid. I thought that the Richardson for Seth Curry deal was just an absolute steal for Dallas. And now all the people in Dallas are pissing and moaning about not having Seth Curry. And
probably pissing and moaning about having Josh Richardson at $12
million. Right.
Because he was. Yeah, he got removed.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll take him on the Timberwolves.
Well, sure, that's a
I think
that'd
be a pretty
bar,
nice, you know, bar. We got $12 million worth of stuff we can give them for that.
Sure, sure. It's, but we do this thing a lot in the league, and you're guilty of it, I'm guilty of it, where a lot of people are guilty of it, where the idea of the 3-and-D guy, we really, really pump up. And when the 3-and-D guy loses one of the 3 or D, they are
only a 3 or a D.
Exactly.
Which is what Seth Curry is. He's a super 3.
Exactly, but it's a super 3.
Yes,
I mean,
that's right. You're right.
Seth Curry, and this has been for years. I remember just like looking up.
He's always been a great shooter.
The catch, he's literally led the league in catch and shoot 3-point shooting for like 3 years. So he's not the best shooter, but in that specific thing, the best, elite,
right.
super, whatever
right,
you call
right.
it. I mean, I just think he's been so impressive in this. Shake has given them impressiveness there. But still, I'm watching that second half last night, and it's like you need that point guard. You need that guy to get you into it, particularly in the non-Embiid minutes. I think if Embiid for them to win is going to have to be okay. You know, he's going to have to be healthy. So that's gonna, you know, that's gonna rectify itself. Where you can go to Embiid in the post and you can win games mm-hmm. if he's healthy. That'll be fine. But still, you have these times where one, if he's sitting 12 minutes a game, you got to survive those 12 minutes a game and not die when you know Dwight is out there, or if he gets in foul trouble or whatever it might be, or if he has to go back to the locker room. I mean, it's.
I think they have the talent on the roster. They have obviously not demonstrated it.
For two coaches now in those minutes.
Yeah, that's right. And some of that is that Embiid is so usage heavy when he's on the court.
Sure.
And it would require Simmons getting his head right and hitting some free throws. I think they have a good core. You know, I really do. Even aside from Embiid, I don't think it's a one-man team by any means. I mean, or even a 1-2. I obviously I'm big on Harris. And I'm trying to think of the other guys on the court or the other guys on the roster, Philly's roster. Let me see if I have it here.
I got it. I mean, well, okay. Simmons.
Yeah, obviously Simmons, Embiid, and Harris are the three.
Cork, I mean, then Korkmaz has been starting.
Korkmaz is a shooter, right? Mm-hmm.
And he's big.
Yeah.
Seth Curry, Shake Milton. I guess I can just...
There's another guy who's good.
Dwight Howard. He's actually kind of a frisky.
He's a good 5 or 10 minute, you know.
Thibault.
Yeah, you know what? I actually am thinking of Danny Green, right. Who was hurt now. But Thibault, you know, they have the people. Doc ought to think about trapping on defense, swallowing Trae Young whole, and relying on Tobias Harris and some other folks to get them going. I mean,
but that's why that's what's been great from Atlanta, where they go to that double drag at the top. When you go to the double, I mean, you got to trap the second one. It's confusing.
They have the right Bogdanovich. I will say that.
That's true.
I mean, that guy.
Stones.
He's one of the few guys that, you know, one of the things that you never know when guys are just announcing on television whether they'll give you anything you can use. But I was not aware that this guy is like a EuroLeague playoff MVP and is like used to this stuff.
Well, he's older. He's like 28. So he's one of those guys.
But not only that, he's a guy that like is renowned for he is, you know, we got sold a bill of goods on Belly's Professor Big Shots. He is a guy that, you know, wins playoff MVPs.
Right.
And so that's a nice guy to have as your pocket option, as your guy that when Trey and Collins aren't working the pick and roll quite as well, or Capella's getting snuffed on lobs, you can just, you know, hey, there's Bogdanovich in the slot, you know?
It's kind of, in the playoffs, I was looking at this last night, it feels to me like Bogdanovich is shooting like 50% from three.
I know.
He's shooting 35%.
I know.
And Trey's shooting 33%.
But they're big shots.
He's hit, you're right. He has hit in big shots. Okay, so with Philly, this is where my mind went going into that game. Obviously, we know Kyrie's out.
Right.
And so I went into that Philly game last night thinking,
Here's the potential champion.
Right? And so I went into it watching it with that
having
lens.
Having called Philly, I actually thought the same thing.
Yeah. And it wasn't a performance that inspired
them. Oh, my God. It was awful. They were up 18.
But there could have been, like, you choose games one or two, or what were the games that they won? Choose one of the games that they won. And we
both of those, games two and three.
And I think you and I are talking, and anybody else who's talking and writing about the league right now is
healthy Embiid
is saying it's Philly's to lose, right? And so I don't want to do the overreaction thing
exactly
to one game and one game where I think Embiid wasn't right. I mean, he went down in the beginning of the third quarter.
I want to see Embiid not settle. That's all. I want to see him. Joel Embiid at 50% can still get that front court in foul trouble. Mm-hmm. And that's something he has been very reluctant to do. Both Embiid and Giannis have been very disappointing in the way they have not punished opposing front
They did
front
the first
courts.
Two games. When he had, I, think I know, he had 39
I know
the
you
first
think one. That, and I actually did look back when you said the reason he wasn't getting any shots at the rim is because he was getting fouled and going to the line. He went to the line 16 times that game. So you were right about that. But he had the ball so often in the half court that I do think that even if it's only like a third of the time he's shooting mid-ranges or that face-up jump shot is accurate shot. But I've got to think, I know myself watching it, I think, all right, Embiid got two on him. On the mid-range, nobody got in foul trouble. It's only 2 points. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's still, if you're thinking about things in a certain way.
Yeah, we want him to be Shaq. We want him to be Shaq.
Yeah, I want him to be, I guess, you know, Shaq would be the
or go
extreme
to the,
that, a part of that.
I just wonder if he can't do that for a whole game.
Right, because he does have a torn meniscus. I know. Like, I know. And the fact that he was good as he was in the first two, you know, games two and three, made us kind of think, well, all right, he's going to be, you know, he'll be all right. And maybe he just can't do it.
And it's also got to be, I mean, it's like, it's the same reason why older guys, when they're still in the league, they're just squaring people up, and you know, Tim Duncan off the backboard, right? Like,
right,
because it's just
because it's hard. It's hard to go to the rim.
Exactly.
40 times.
Exactly. So I'm totally with you, and it's my reaction, particularly when he goes 0-for-12 there. But it's just,
and also is begging fouls.
Yeah,
he's 290 pounds. You can't beg fouls.
But I mean, welcome to 2021. He's not unique in that. It's,
I know,
it's across,
but
it's across,
he's such a loudmouth, and he's such a he acts like the Lion King out there, and all of a sudden, hey, how about a whistle?
The Lion King. All right, let's pivot over to Clippers Jazz, which I think both of those games last night on Monday night, or that's those series, Hawks Sixers and Clippers Jazz, have become my favorite.
Yeah, they were a lot of fun. The Clippers Jazz series, the Clippers gave us a taste in that first half. I mean, they did it against Dallas a few times, but the Jazz are a sturdier test. They just destroyed the Jazz in the first half, first quarter especially.
It was over.
And you know, I've bagged on Ty Lue many times. I've never liked him much. I always thought he was LeBron's, you know, plaything when he won the ring in Cleveland. He's had a great series. The Reggie Jackson idea, the quote-unquote small lineup with 3 6'8" to 6'10" guys,
yeah,
has been genius against the Jazz because it's big enough to contest but small enough to kind of neuter Rudy a little bit. And so
he's guarding Kawhi. I mean, often. I would lump myself into a similar mind of Ty Lue historically. But what I think he has always been really good at is managing personalities and relating
that is
to
true.
Players. He's got Rajon Rondo getting DMPs.
Yes.
Now.
I know.
I mean, with Rondo being cool about that.
Pat Bev being a right. situational guy. Pat Bev is like a chronic hard ass.
I mean, and you kind of, and in ways, they kind of need all those guys too, because it's kind of like the Brooklyn thing too, where it's you need the two plus support. I think for them to win, they need two plus support, and that support.
And they're 12 deep.
Yeah, but it's piecemeal, right?
Yes.
It's not...
Yeah, you don't want Luke Kennard out there all the time.
But sometimes you do.
Sometimes you
Zubats
do.
Zubats you want out there sometimes, yep, too, to play with some force around the basket. I mean, it's...
Yeah, there's some great... You know, Terrence Mann.
Yeah.
You know...
He's right up your alley.
Are you finally playing him, you know?
No, he's been good.
He was probably like minus 20 last night, and I still like the way he played.
It's an interesting coaching series because I would say, to me, I know that this didn't, you know, it was Monte Williams and Tom Thibodeau. I think the best coach in the NBA this year was Quinn Snyder. And that was just from watching a lot of Jazz games. I think no coach had a better, during the regular season at least, and probably still, had a better feel for his team. Mm-hmm. Of,
I would argue Monte Williams, but I get your point.
Yeah, and it was... splitting hairs to some degree, but it always stood out to me when I'm watching Jazz games on League Pass. And I think, so what I say that to say that going into this series, I mean, the last time we talked about it, I said coin flip, I'll go with the Jazz to win the series. And part of that was because
I took the Clips.
And you did.
But did you expect Mike Conley to be sitting?
Yeah,
I did not. And I think that's huge.
It's massive. I still think it is. So I would in this series, that's been more balanced out to me, a coaching advantage. I haven't really seen that transpire. Uh-huh. Not that less so that Snyder has, I don't think Snyder's messed up.
Right.
But I think Lue managed well and found lineup combinations.
Well, the Clippers were certainly more prepared to play game four than the Jazz.
I mean,
the Jazz, their whole thing is ball movement, right?
Right.
And Batum had at least four deflections in the first 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was, talk about a guy, he Boris D'd that thing so perfectly. I mean, you know, and... for those who don't know, a Boris Diaw is somebody who was absolutely crap on a bad team and just doesn't like to play basketball for losing teams anymore, and then gets a shot at playing with a really good team and suddenly becomes his former vintage self. And that is Batum. But Batum has even kind of remade himself.
Shots fired at French people. Aren't they both French?
Oh, that's right.
I think
so. Coincidence? I think not.
Batum's been
how
incredible.
Michael Petras did in the clutch.
He was on that 09 Magic team.
Yeah, I know. He was good.
He was good.
I wonder if he sucked every other place.
I think he did.
It could be a trend.
Warriors, we'll also see. The thing to go back to there is Conley. And what I said when we were talking before is I had a lot of concern about Donovan Mitchell in this series, which in a lot of ways seems very stupid. I wrote down
not as much. And, not as much concern as necessary. Talk about a guy who looks good on a shot right now.
Yeah.
Oh my God. His stroke right now is so smooth. He used to be a penetrator.
33 a game. This is for the whole playoffs, not just the series. But 33 a game, 43% from three on 11 threes per game, 48.5% from two, 61% true shooting. So I say that to point out that I was wrong to have concern about Donovan Mitchell in this series. But
your concern was he would be a ball hog, though, and the difference is he has to be now because Conley isn't in. And so I think
couldn't have said it better myself.
You probably were about to say that.
I think I was going to stumble over it.
Oh, okay. Well, Conley sets up, he does the hockey assist so Ingles gets the assist.
Yeah.
He sets up Rudy on the pick and roll. He sets up.
Which is huge.
Know, oh, it's enormous. I mean,
and Mitchell doesn't.
And by the way, he pulls up really well. So you have to come out to him. And so all those things,
it's not
you
an
want
either
those
or
things
thing.
To happen so Donovan Mitchell isn't shooting 11 threes a game.
Exactly. And the thing is, I think Mitchell would benefit from playing with a creator too. And you kind of remember in the fourth quarter when they kind of started making their comeback there what did they cut it down to, like 10 or 11?
Yeah.
Well, it's because they were instigating the offense through Ingles. Ingles was finding Gobert on the roll. It's just the Donovan Mitchell possessions are going to be good.
Yes.
And they have been. They have been good. The thing is with not every possession can be one player. And what happens when Mitchell is out there and Conley is not is the non-Mitchell possessions are crap for this Utah team. So it's not that Conley needs to replace Mitchell or it's any sort of pecking order sort of thing. It's what Conley brought to that team during this season is so much stability and excellence to the non-Mitchell possessions. And it's why, I think I said this on the last pod too, it's why I loved watching Utah without Donovan Mitchell, because then it's every possession
is just
this ball movement game. So really, I think there's a way you can look at this Utah team and go, well, if Conley does come back and we have this Donovan Mitchell going right now.
Right.
And those two synergists, that could be your champion.
And that does, your caution was, will Mitchell become, you know,
and
a,
I
a
remain
ball hog?
Skeptical that he would cede the necessary bandwidth to Conley.
And
when he comes
it
back.
May be that if they bring Conley back slowly, that you have an opportunity. If Conley thrives in limited minutes and they're winning, could Donovan Mitchell be like Booker? Could he become? Because he's got that in him. I mean, he can see the floor. And the offense, Phoenix's offense, is designed to do things. So it does remain to be seen. I agree with you, though, that I want the game where the Clippers are on their game and Mike Conley is back. I think that is the reason why we both thought this would be my comment going in was, I have no idea what Utah is, you know?
Yeah, right.
I mean, they could be terrible. They could be great. They've been both now to some extent. But they clearly have a much better chance of being consistently good if Conley's on the floor. One of the things I thought was interesting last night was how many options Ty Lue has, though. I mean, if Donovan Mitchell is burning you, throw Pat Bev out there and just get under his skin for a while, and then go back to Reggie Jackson, who, you know, burns him in another way on the other side of the court or whatever, or throw in Terrence Mann to get gritty for a while, or, you know, put Marcus Morris at center, you know, put Paul George as the point guard practically. I mean, he is now. I mean, Reggie Jackson is more or less a two guard
right
when Paul George is out there. And then Kawhi suddenly says, wait a minute, there's no more point guard. I'm going to take the ball now and
shoot. Well, I was going to say, that's the name we haven't talked about.
Yeah.
He is shooting in the playoffs 64.5% from two. From 2 point, just exclusively 2 point range, 66% from mid range. That is robotic dominant. You don't, that doesn't happen.
And they're line drives. I mean, it isn't even like he gets. Has Kawhi ever gotten a roll? I don't think he has.
Well, are you? What about, he got a bounce. He got a four bounce in that a Sixers bounce, series.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. He's not somebody who, he doesn't have the shooter's touch. He has, you know, have you a Rubio-esque, Kevin Garnett-esque line.
Have you ever played beer
drive.
Pong before?
Huh?
Have you ever played beer pong before?
Yes.
Where, see, he's the dude.
It's all on the wrist.
But he's the dude who leans over the table right. and just throws it as hard as he can at the
right.
Yeah, but I mean he's been absolutely incredible. True shooting, 30 in the playoffs, 38-4, 39% from three, 64.5% from two, 68% true shooting, and that's only one side of the ball where they are just able. He's got a cool synergy with Ty Lue in a way where he's like, let's move me around situationally to what you need me to do. I mean, going back to the Dallas series.
Right.
What do I need to do? Where is,
do you need to guard Luka, or do you need to be in getting rebounds or whatever?
Or do we need you to just go hang out on Porzingis in the corner there in case they, to take away that option from him being a screener? You know, and I mean, I have no idea what's going on in Kawhi Leonard's head just as like a human, but
well, there's all kinds of robot jokes, you know, that are, you know.
But at the same time, it's selflessly effective, you know. He's about, I mean, he's the classic keeping the main thing guy, you know. And I mean, I fall victim to this. I think we all do. It's, we look for cachet.
New flavors, right.
Yeah. And you know, and KD, and I think for me, in my head, my knee-jerk reaction is, you know, KD's the best player in the playoffs right now.
Yeah, and I've always disagreed about that.
But that, I think, again, as I'm psychoanalyzing myself, is it's like, in a way, he is a new flavor. Because he wasn't
in the league last year.
Exactly.
Right.
And the more I watched Kawhi, the more I watched last night, I was like, man, do I need to reassess, you know, my assessment of this whole playoffs because of the hierarchy.
I'll push back, and I'm pushing back against my own argument right
there
now
go.
Because
good.
I'm not a KD
Those
guy.
Those are the best.
But imagine Kawhi without...
What do you mean you're not a KD guy?
You can't well, you know not I mean. Be a KD I don't think guy. He's the best. I don't think he's in the top three. So most people would say I'm underrated.
Let's do it. ESPN list right here. Top three players
be
in the
very,
NBA.
Very hard for me.
No, three. You could do three.
Well, this year, I think Jokic was the best player.
In the playoffs?
No.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking
about
the playoffs.
In the playoffs thus far. Whoo, man, that's interesting. Chris Paul is first.
Okay. Then it's KD or Kawhi, right?
I mean, Dame. His team didn't win. It only lasted six games, but man, he was phenomenal, wasn't he?
And even we haven't even said Luka, who was insane too. Exactly. I guess I've kind of moved on to these.
Okay,
to these
of
eight
who's
teams
remaining? Here. All right, fine. But even then, KD's 2-2 right now. I mean, you know,
I think these next two games in the Brooklyn Milwaukee, which people are probably listening to this after the most recent Milwaukee game,
and that's
like
fine.
KD could have had 45 and won.
I expect him to get at least 40 tonight. And what I was going to say, and will still say, is that imagine Kawhi without Paul George, who's had a phenomenal last two games.
Sure.
That's what KD's been dealing with right now. You know, if he had Kyrie or Harden, then the analogy with Kawhi might be more accurate. It is something to have another guy take the burden off you or be complimentary to you. I happen to think that George and Kawhi are a little bit redundant. I think Ty Lue going to the quote-unquote small lineup and giving PG-13 more point guard responsibilities has changed that dynamic
a
little,
point.
Which is another reason why I think it's been a really good move. But I do think that if Durant had more help, you know, I mean, he's turning Bruce Brown into a thing just on the high pick and roll. If you know how to run a fundamental high pick and roll, you're going to get an open shot. If you can hit that floater playing with KD,
which
then you're going to get 20 a night.
Yeah, which
I mean, that means he's a pretty good player.
But Bruce Brown's got to be able to hit that. I mean, that's a whole separate sort of thing. But that's how they lost, you know, game three. It's Bruce Brown.
The fact that Bruce Brown is important to your team is where the problem is.
Yeah.
And that's because you have two superstars out.
Right. It's, again, and, you know, we've been saying this, these playoffs are so fun because of their confusion, right?
And because of the fact that injuries have been really capricious. I mean, Embiid played, what, 31, 33 minutes or whatever it was the other night?
Right.
He's injured, you know? And so you don't say it cost them, you know, an injury game, but it was right. An injury game.
But what's good, too, is like every team has had one or has one, right? I mean, we could go down even
– except Atlanta.
Well, I was going to say Trey last night with his shoulder. I don't know what that was. It surely
and
made
Kawhi
it look like
Kawhi with the
it.
Knee, he said, I'm fine, but who knows?
I know. And then Embiid, obviously.
Right. I'm trying to think of who else. Isn't there somebody on Atlanta who –
Hunter isn't playing.
Oh,
he's out,
yeah.
And he's probably
bringing him up. He would be the perfect guy right now,
right,
to go against either Tobias Harris or Ben Simmons.
Exactly. So it really good. I mean, obviously Chris Paul's arm almost fell off in the first round. The
and
Nuggets
then he
didn't
stitched it back, and he's better than ever.
You know, Jamal Murray didn't play, and honestly, the Clippers are probably the healthiest team. Have been the healthiest.
Isn't
team.
That weird? But they go 12 deep too, you know.
And then obviously Conley out. Yeah, we went through all of them. I mean, it's always a bummer when injuries impact result.
Right.
But you know, if it's equal or fairly equal, like whatever, you got to play the games. That's part of the process, and it's not always bad luck. Like it's not bad luck that Joel Embiid is hurt.
No.
That's baked into the thing.
Well, that's
and same
the thing.
Thing with Mike Conley at 34 years old or 35 years old, and same thing with Chris Paul, right? Like, so.
And if you have a team that is top heavy, then when those guys get hurt, it's the way you built your team.
Right.
It's the risk you take. Even if the guy has been previously indestructible, it's better to have. In my opinion, now, this is actually a fundamental disagreement between us. Seven really good guys rather than two great guys and five mediocre guys.
Well, yeah,
fundamental. See, that's what I think about Phoenix, you know. I think Phoenix is deep. I think that the Clippers are deep. I think the Clippers and Phoenix are the teams that I see coming out of, you know, the West.
You can only have one.
Obviously, Phoenix. I've nailed that one.
Yeah.
But I think the Clippers will beat the Jazz. I would not be surprised if I'm wrong, especially if Conley comes back and plays well. But a guy we haven't talked about, you know, and let's do that for just a minute. It's not a fun thing to talk about, but Rudy Gobert, again, yet again in the postseason, is being rendered less than he might otherwise be. He needs the right circumstances. And when he has the right circumstances, he's so much fun. He led the league in plus-minus net rating by a ton this year.
Sure.
Did he have a single last night? I mean, I don't remember. But it was right around that.
And, I mean, the two things I would point to in that are foul trouble last night, limited his minutes, particularly. He played 11 first-half minutes. And then also, like, and this, you're right, this is about circumstance, but without Conley, he's a lot worse.
Right.
But that is the nature of the
And the Clippers can play their quote-unquote small lineup specifically to neuter him.
But it is also the case for every center in the league right now, all of the best centers in the league right now, other than Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic, that they need a good point guard to play with. Otherwise, they, are clearly tiers lower than that. And that's Bam Adebayo, that's Clint Capella, that's Karl Anthony Towns, that's Rudy Gobert. Like we could go down the list.
So that is why the case for Rudy Gobert as a force in this league. He's a polarizing player in terms of people's opinion of him, and that is not going to change, I guess, is my point.
My point is just he just is what he is, which is it's where, really good in those right circumstances.
Where do you rank him?
Third.
Why just third, though? I mean, why not fifth? Why is he better than Bam?
Because I think he's much more impactful defensively than Bam is.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think Karl Anthony Towns has more skill than he does. We haven't seen Cat put that together to have impact in a winning situation at all. So is there potential for Karl Anthony Towns to get over Rudy Gobert in those power rankings? Sure, but I don't know what the other current case is. Clint Capella? No.
Gobert's, I was about to say, why not Clint Capella then?
Because
led the league in blocks.
But it's also getting steamrolled here against Joel Embiid. Yeah, but he led the league in blocks.
Joel Embiid in the mid ranges.
But you don't think Rudy Gobert is a worse defender than Clint Capella is?
I'm a devil's advocate here. I agree with you.
I'm just saving you here.
I believe that Rudy Gobert is the third best center in the league. I also think
with a glass ceiling.
Yeah.
To me that is what it is. Doesn't mean he sucks. And I know that's not what you're saying, but I hear and I see the same sort of things, but it's like,
can the Utah Jazz win a ring with Rudy Gobert at center? I mean, those are the kinds of questions, and I don't like that talk usually in terms of has he won a ring or can he, but
he would need to have, as all of those centers, Jokic has what, just like Jokic right. is going to need support around him, and Embiid is going to need support around him. Like, could the Jazz win the championship this year if they had a little bit younger and healthier Mike Conley and a synergy with Donovan Mitchell? Yes, I think this team could, but it's really hard to win a championship in the NBA, and I think you can very much be the third best player at the center position and have that be a kind of far cry.
Right. I guess what I'm saying is I think that Rudy Gobert was optimized during the regular season, but it has been an unfortunate circumstance that he has continually been found wanting in playoff basketball.
Right.
This was an opportunity to change that narrative. Conley's injury obviously changes that a fair bit. Also, I will say that the refs let him play last night, and I also think the refs letting him play really was a greater advantage to the Clippers than it was to the Jazz. I mean, Marcus Morris fouls on just about every play.
I know.
And Batum is a savvy vet. Zubac, clearly, I mean, they showed a couple of times where Zubac was pulling shenanigans on Rudy. And he's a weird, intimidating, shot-blocking finesse guy. Right. I mean, that's a weird combination. And he's never really, created a... He doesn't have a jump shot. I mean, there's all kinds of weird things about Rudy Gobert. He's a creature of the franchise he has always been with, and their particular inability to attract huge names and all that stuff.
You said it best, man. Victim of circumstance. But at this, yeah, I don't know. I think there's this array, a person we both really respect in the media and his writing is John Hollinger. And I think it would probably fair to say that Hollinger has gone a little too far in overrating Gobert and saying, I don't know if he had Gobert. He certainly had him in the MVP conversation, maybe as his second or third or something.
Ah, interesting.
I think what can be true is that is an overration.
Right.
Or overrating.
Right.
And also at the same time, it's an underrating by, you know, that devil's advocate argument that you're making and right. a lot of people are making right now, that, you know, he's limited and had a single and some of those sort of things. The center is a weird position in the NBA because it asks you to be gigantic and diligent. And those things rarely lead to true, like, spectacular play.
And it's a space and pace game, even with the advent of the big man coming back. And I think that it is a game that both favors and changes the way the big man is treated in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So that if Embiid were healthy and playing right, I mean, I called the Sixers for a reason. I mean, I think Simmons and Embiid are perfect playoff guys. But they're both a little squirrely, too. I mean, I don't know. With Embiid, it may just be health. With Simmons, the guy's just taken a ton of criticism since he came into the league. And part of it is people don't recognize defense, and he's such a great defender. But also the whole three-point reluctance and that now the free throw yips. The poor guy, I mean, you know, I hope he has a great girlfriend is all I can say, you know, or just somebody who gives him joy off the court because he's in Philly as well, you know, which has never been particularly kind. And so, I don't know. It's what is great about the three remaining series is they're 2-2. There's no clear cut. I wouldn't plop down huge money on any of those six teams left coming out of that round. And yet a lot of people's reputations are on the line, you know? Kawhi, Rudy Gobert, Paul George, and obviously Embiid and Simmons, and, you know, just you keep going down the list. Giannis, you know? KD. It's just those are big names with big egos and big reputations, and so it's gonna be fun.
It's gonna make for great theater. He's Britt Robson at The Athletic. You can follow him on Twitter at Britt Robson. I'm Dane Moore at Dane Moore NBA. Britt, I'm gonna keep you here. We're gonna do a separate thing.
All right.
A little break, and then we'll talk a little bit of Timberwolves for a separate episode. But thank you for listening to this. I'll be back on the feed tomorrow with Britt and I talking a little bit about the Timberwolves' recent ownership stuff and just news and notes on the Timberwolves. And then Jake Fisher of Bleacher Report will be joining to talk about his book, Built to Lose, on the tanking era. That'll be on Thursday. Until then, I'm Dane. Peace out. How I'm feeling, man, I hope it never stop, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah. Don't let standards ever bring you down, yeah.